This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
With lockdowns and partial lockdowns being imposed almost everywhere in the world over the last few weeks, more businesses have found a need to take their businesses online. This forced digital adoption not only affects entrepreneurs and their businesses, but manufacturers, distributors, and the average consumer as well. To give us some insight into the landscape of the e-commerce industry right now and how businesses of all makes and sizes are adapting and rising from the ashes of COVID-19, as he put it, we have with us on the phone right now Joachim Sebastian, founder and CEO of cross-border e-commerce specialist Everpeaks Consulting. Hi Joachim, how are you doing? How's the MCO been treating you and Everpeaks?
Well, I've been doing pretty okay actually, because we are able to function on a work from home basis. The company is fully operational. We're still supporting our clients in delivering sales across the world right now actually.
All right. So when I contacted you about this interview, you said you had plenty to share about what's happening in the e-commerce scene. You know, what's your read on the landscape right now?
I think, number one, there are two separate segments. Number one is the sentiment. Number two is what's actually happening on the ground, right? Mm. So when you talk about market sentiment, there's a lot of emotion in play because there's great uncertainty. There's a lot of burden that is placed on companies to support their operating needs as well as to sustain through this period of turmoil. And on the flip side, the consumers, they are on, per se, a lockdown, right? The movement control order. And they're not moving around to get the regular purchases of retail outfits. So they're moving into a much more digital ecosystem or digital purchases or digital experience where the purchase behavior is shifting. But you mix these two together, if you listen to one point of the market, you think that, you know, it's all a fire and brimstone. And if you look at the other side, the guys that are really being quiet, they're making a killing right now.
Hmm.
You know, so they're two very separate things.
Okay, so, you know, from what you can see over this past few weeks, you know, who's actually making a killing and who's suffering at the moment?
I would say the big businesses, the airlines are definitely suffering. Any tourist, travel or service related industry is really bleeding and hurting right now. But infrastructure businesses in logistics, businesses that have a full e-commerce fulfillment methodology and multiple platforms where they are able to sell their goods, these guys are doing very well. For instance, I would presume Grab is doing pretty good due to the reliance of the entire ecosystem on their infrastructure.
Mm.
So they've paid the price to grow and build this infrastructure, and now is the time where, you know, it pays off for them as a business.
I wanted to touch on forced digital adoption. You know, give us the good, the bad, and the ugly on this.
Yes, definitely. So as we know, in some of the markets, e-commerce represents approximately 10 to 11% of retail. So, I mean, the perception out there is e-commerce is huge and big and great and all that. But in reality, if you look at the numbers, retail is still 10 times bigger. You know,
mm.
It is the one of the core shifts in the ecosystem caused by COVID. Is the movement of the percentage of digital purchases and digital e-commerce purchases in retail. I believe that at the end of this year, because of COVID, you're going to see at least a 5 to 10% increase in digital and e-commerce purchases on retail, for sure, because of the social distancing, the lack of the ability of the consumer to move around, and again, the penetration of the digital ecosystem within the lives of every person in the community right now. So that's going to be a shift there, firstly. Number two, the retailers are going to have to adopt. Those who have been resistant, certain age demographic have been proven to be resistant to adopt digital technology, and because of the COVID issue, they're going to be forced to do it. So, you know, what this disease is really doing is accelerating our digital adoption by maybe 2 to 5 years.
Mm.
In terms of the digital adoption, right? So, for instance, I'll just elaborate a bit more about the community that we're talking about. So, you know, your aunties and uncles or your grandpa and grandma, now in this situation, they are actually under lockdown, right? So they can't actually go out to make their purchases. But because of the prevalence of e-commerce, and now there are so many new service providers who are doing everything from kampung chicken delivery to vegetables to fruits, it has become an essential service. But there is another aspect to this that we must take into consideration is the cost. So the cost of these services is not really, affordable to all layers of society. I mean, you've got your B40 and M40 and the T20, right? So this will cater more towards the T20 and the M40 who are able to, you know, pay that 6 ringgit for delivery, pay that 3 ringgit for delivery, work together with the digital service providers to get their daily needs. But the B40, now this is a group that, yes, is digital as well, but they lack the cash flow and the affordability to fully immerse themselves into this environment, because every purchase is an additional logistics and delivery cost. Now, during the MCO, they may be forced to do it. But after the MCO is over, because of affordability, they're going to move back, right? So there's a clawback after we're done. So right now, the adoption will be significantly increased, but then it's going to move backwards once the MCO is over and you know, the standard daily routines are restored to our society, definitely.
So both
aspects of it, yeah.
So affordability is one thing, but we've also been hearing stories of an increase in scams and people actually, you know, taking advantage of this need to digitalize their businesses immediately.
Yeah, literally. I mean, you see things, scams from the mask scam that's going on versus purchases that are not delivered. You know, there's some very small little white collar crimes, you'd say, or just petty theft, where the service provider doesn't deliver exactly what he actually promised online. So that's one way of looking at it. And then there's the full on fraud. You know, the guys who call you and say, "Hi, you're under investigation from this court, and you know, unless you pay up and whatever not," and then they steal your data and they take your bank account balances out of it. But I think this is another symptom of digital, where you need to be able to educate and to support the community in fraud protection measures. Because digital itself is not something that's bad. It is a position that creates efficiency and creates a lot of time savings. Now, when you create time savings and efficiency, the duration from service procurement to service payment becomes a lot smaller and a lot lower in terms of touch points, right? And that's when fraud becomes more acute. You don't have enough time to deal with it before the guy gets your cash or gets your money or gets a transaction. And although it is a higher risk position, I think what we can do is to educate the community on ways that they can get their refunds or dispute or, you know, raise their case to the financial services provider. Because the great thing about e-commerce is everything's documented. If you purchase off a platform, you will deal with a few parties, right? First, the platform owner, number one. Number two, the actual e-commerce website or interface. The third one is a financial payment service provider or a gateway, right? So, for instance, if you're doing exports, it's going to be PayPal or Payoneer, right? These are financial services that provide the pathway for money to go from a consumer to a business.
Right.
Now, when there are disputes, I think a lot of people don't understand that they can actually raise their case with the financial service provider, and that will cause a lot of disruption to the person who owns that payment gateway, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the measures that we should, you know, move to educate the community, because now that e-commerce is so prevalent, they must understand how to protect themselves.
All right, it's time for a break. But when we come back, how businesses can position themselves for global supply. Joachim Sebastian from Everpeak Consulting will be right back on Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Enterprise. My name is Audrey Raj. Joachim Sebastian from Everpeaks Consulting is on the phone with me right now, and we are discussing forced digital disruption and the COVID-19 pandemic, how it's changing the e-commerce landscape. Now, Everpeaks Consulting is, of course, the very first Malaysia-based channel partner for eBay after having worked very closely with eBay over the years in onboarding and helping local SMEs sell their products on the marketplace. So, Joachim, you know, how has COVID-19 and the MCO impacted some of the partners that you're working with?
Okay, so this is going to be slightly shocking, or maybe not so for most people, but we see an increase in demand, contrary to what public data is being published or what they're talking about. The brands that we work with are actually seeing an increase in sales. And there's a solid reason behind this, right? You're going to see lockdowns occurring in countries across the world. And when there are lockdowns, people are at home. And they usually are not working most of the time. Sometimes they are if they have work-from-home arrangements. But there's a lot of people who are just sitting there idle and, you know, they're looking for things to do. Mm. And what easier and better way to maintain their engagement and something that people tend to do is retail therapy, right? So they go online, they search for things that they usually like to do, they like to purchase, and you see a lot of purchases occurring. Now, I've seen a couple of data points that are being published by companies in Malaysia that show, oh, it's a very scary and volatile environment and everybody's going to essential goods and purchases, but for what we do, we are seeing an increase in non-essential purchases. For instance, automotive goods, for say, motorcycle parts, or some home decor goods as well. So, contrary to popular belief, I think we should not be misled by market sentiment, because there's a lot of fear going around, right? This is a very, very severe pandemic, the worst in a century, I believe, besides the Spanish flu that occurred earlier. And everybody's scared, but people are still buying. The consumer behavior is still on a retail purchase spike, I would say. So that's what our data shows.
So you mentioned that businesses are rising up from the ashes of COVID-19. You know, what are these businesses doing to capitalize or take advantage of the opportunities that have risen from this global crisis?
Ah, yes, a good question. I believe that there is something that they are doing differently versus most other companies who are still struggling to find a position in today's volatile market, right? And one of the core differences is their understanding and execution of digital. Now, when you speak about digital, most people assume that, oh, let's sell on e-commerce, oh, let's open a website, let's get some Facebook ads and Google ads out. And that's essentially a simplified idea of digital for them. Mm. Now, although it's not wrong, the digital ecosystem is a much more vast and granular, I guess, a suite of different products and services that you need to include in your strategy. So I'll give you an example. The first one is, when you run a business, there are multiple points of discovery. There are multiple points of content consumption, and there are multiple points of brand positioning within the digital ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, companies don't exploit all of these things. So I'll give you a full spread here, right? So if I was a brand from Malaysia, first thing I would do is I'd have a website, and that website, I'd publish keyword-centric content that will enable me to be discovered if anybody searches for these keywords on the popular search engines. Mm. Next, I would get a Google My Business account registered so that when anybody searches on Google, they actually can find my business and learn about what we do and also understand that we're a valid business that has an address in a real-world situation. That's the next point, right?
Right.
And the third one is, I'd get a Facebook page to enable social social interactions where those who are looking at their social media feeds and all that have a chance to discover what we do. Then that's a Facebook page. Besides that, you also want to integrate your Facebook page with an Instagram account. So that gives a visual representation of the business. Mm. Now, when you have an Instagram account and a Facebook account, you would actually get access to Facebook ads. right? So Facebook ads are more effective because they can push viewers onto multiple consumption points of your digital media. And then you have your e-commerce asset, where it can be a marketplace such as Amazon or eBay or Lazada or Shopee, and it can be an e-commerce enabled website, which is whichever brand.com that you have that has the ability for product purchases, checkout, and a payment gateway to actually get funds transferred back to you. And of course, all these different assets function on a core, I would say, gasoline of the digital ecosystem, which is marketing and advertising. So that's when you look at Facebook ads, Google ads, social ads, purchases of different media providers that give you access to affiliate advertising and things like that to generate traffic. So traffic is the lifeblood of e-commerce and digital. So if you build an asset base that's functioning and you provide good content, plus you put the right kind of traffic through, that's what we mean by having a working digital ecosystem. Most of the time, brands don't execute to this spread. And that's why it becomes very expensive for every single purchase that they acquire on the e-commerce side, because they're not exploiting all these various assets to the best of their ability.
Okay, well, what about manufacturers and distributors? Can they do the same as well? Because I understand that in this situation now, they've felt the need to move to consumer commerce too, right?
Yes, yes. Let's just put it this way. For Everpeaks, our vision is to enable direct-to-consumer commerce or manufacture-to-consumer commerce around the world, where we see this as a huge wave of the future. You see, nowadays, consumers actually expect to, number one, engage with the brand. If they have any issues with the product, they want to provide feedback, or they want to take pictures and tag your Instagram portfolio or your Instagram profile on their page, they want to have the ability to do so, right? So engaging with consumers on a granular level now becomes an essential strategy for brands. That's the first thing. Second thing is that at times, you know, if you're a tier two brand, especially when you talk about the export market, penetrating into a new market is a very, very expensive proposition. So imagine opening up shops, paying the listing fees for shelves on supermarkets, brand events in big shopping malls to introduce consumers to their brands. And this constitutes a large amount of expenditure prior to any sale, right? So if brands choose to take the direct-to-consumer approach, they have the ability to leverage on e-commerce to be able to connect with consumers, create grassroots-level demand before actually investing big money into building the brand in different countries around the world. So that's another advantage. The third thing is that in today's day and age, logistics is now becoming so advanced. And because of the sheer volume of e-commerce, it's a chicken and egg thing. The volume creates efficiencies. The efficiencies reduce the price per parcel. The price per parcel, when it reduces, increases the logistics capability and the investment and increases the asset base. And that also reduces the price in the end. So it's a virtuous cycle where demand creates efficiency. Efficiency creates more demand and so on. So right now, it's actually becoming so affordable to ship to a consumer anywhere in the world. You don't need to go to distributors. And this is going to create a paradigm shift in the way that consumer behavior is occurring across the world in the next 5 to 10 years, because distributors are also going to be phased out when brand owners start penetrating the markets directly. And this, yes, it may be an apprehensive thing for distributors around the country, but they need to know that this is happening and shift their business model to a different approach where they become not distributors of the product, but they become the service provider, inspection points and warranty centers for brands across the world, right? You can't replace this with e-commerce as of yet. And you need somebody on the ground to actually provide support to the products that are purchased. And this is where I believe distributorship will move to.
All right. So just to recap, Joachim, you know, what can Malaysian businesses do to position their businesses for global supply right now? Now, where do they start and what should they be thinking about?
Okay. Firstly, right now, and for the past 2 to 3 years, digital is the way to go. But truly getting involved, get the board, get the management, get the people on top, the decision makers, truly exposed to what digital really is. So I've explained that in the previous question. There's a huge spread of different products. So digital is not just one avenue. It's not just export e-commerce. It's not just e-commerce. It's also content. It's also strategy. It's also asset utilization and truly getting the right kind of people in your team to exploit these assets to the best of their ability. That is the first thing. So building your digital asset base is a brand building, company building activity that must be prioritized. Next is the ability to penetrate into new markets that have never been opened before. Now, I like to share some of the surprising numbers that may shock some people, some of your listeners. When we manage businesses and brand owners from Malaysia to generate sales on Amazon and eBay, we've actually sold products that are the most expensive one that we sold was $9,000, a single item. From Malaysia.
Wow.
So the ticket size of these items are also not as small as you think, and they're not limited by just what's there for consumer demand, because every different vertical, every different set of keywords, every different product category has its own behavior. So, you know, you're not going to expect somebody who's looking for generators to buy a $30, $40 generator. It doesn't exist, right? So baseline demand is there on a category and industry-specific benchmark. So what happens is that when people or when companies who are not traditionally in this ecosystem penetrate this system, they get access to a consumer base that is unserved and provide a true revenue and profit-generating ability. Because imagine this. If you're a generator producer, a manufacturer of generators in Malaysia, right? Generally, you would have distributors across the world, which will take 50% margin. Now, you still got to keep going with that. You got to support your distributors and keep generating the revenue through those streams. But through e-commerce, you'd actually get to hit your buyer in a different country, for instance, Sweden. And when they purchase the generator from you, you get 100% of the retail sale. So that's 50% additional margin that you don't get access to and you lose because of your traditional distribution model.
Right.
And that 50%, you can attribute maybe half back into marketing, building a digital team. You know, having this point of view versus trying to push through greater throughput through resistant distributors right now. Because distributors around the world are not going to take stock at this juncture because there's too much volatility. And this is the perfect time for manufacturers to explore e-commerce as a measure to reach the consumers around the world.
All right. Joachim, you know, just before we go, one last one and a quick one, you know. How do you see the e-commerce industry evolving at the end of this global crisis?
Well, for me, I would say that this crisis moved forward the adoption of e-commerce across the world by possibly 5 to 10%, instead of 11% of retail. We're looking at maybe, you know, 15 to 20%, just because there's this huge market of people who've not been adopted into e-commerce, have been resistant all this while, and they're now forced to adopt it. And as, you know, professional papers and publications claim that, you know, minimum of 21 days of doing something, it creates a habit. Because of COVID, they are forced to adopt e-commerce. So you're going to see a grassroots adoption of e-commerce on a higher level. And companies will now be forced to move into e-commerce because they have to do something to generate revenue. And the traditional business lines, for instance, traditional distribution, traditional dealers and those who stock up across different countries are going to take a while to recover. But the demand is still there. So when the disease goes away, the demand is automatically created, but traditional distribution will not be able to supply that. Because they're still recovering and, you know, there's going to be a situation where, for example, I take the generator example. There's a generator demand in Brazil and the distributor says, okay, we are in a recession. I'm not going to take 5 units. I'm just going to take 3 units for now. And then there are 30 people waiting to buy, but the distributor says, I'm not going to take the risk. So I'm going to be a bottleneck just so that I don't put too much resources into this. And that's where e-commerce overcomes this situation, where those 30 people who are waiting to buy generators can buy direct from the manufacturer. And you can ship immediately as soon as the stock available. So this is what I think is going to happen in the next couple of months once the COVID issue is contained. And besides that, it is going to change the format of how business is being run. Traditional gargantuan companies who cannot adapt will lose market share. Young, digital-enabled, agile, fast companies will pull as much market share as they can away from these businesses who are slow to adapt.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, Joachim.
You're most welcome. Most welcome. I'll be always glad to talk.
I've been speaking with Joachim Sebastian, CEO of end-to-end e-commerce solutions provider Everpeaks Consulting. Now, for more information on Everpeaks, head on to their website, everpeaks.com. And if you missed out on any part of this show, the podcast of this interview will be up on our website, bfm.my, the BFM app, Spotify, iTunes. You know the drill. It'll be up in just a few minutes, so go check for them over there. And also go check out some of the cool things SMEs here are doing to power through this COVID-19 pandemic. Just search for Powering Through the Pandemic or COVID-19 on our website and on the BFM app. This is Audrey Raj signing off for Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.